So the, just as I came back, the red light went on. I went over and answered the red light. And Jack Hall was on the desk. And he said to me, he said, you got a shooting on your beat. And I asked him where it was. So I walked all the way back from State Marquette to the, where this, this shooting took place.
Where
on Fort Bradley in Ellum.
Well, that's quite a long way.
Yeah. So when we got there, by that time the ambulances came and they took two or three to the hospital. And the guy that did the shooting got away. So they left Big Felix Lawrence there and me to, in case the guy showed up. So all of a sudden, the beer bottle started to pop, the homebrew started to pop, boom, bang, boom. And both, we took, started out the back door and we did, Felix stepped on a cat. One went one way and me went and I went the other way, scared to death. And so finally, anyway, we kind of all settled down. We finally got enough nerve to go in and go down into the basement, and there the homebrew hole was popped like nobody's business. But the one guy died, and they finally, the guy gave himself up.
Yeah. But this was what, during Prohibition?
During Prohibition time,
so
yeah.
Part of the reason, what, for the shooting is these guys were...
Well, they were in there drinking. And they got into an argument, and they did a little shoot.
It was a blind pig.
Yeah, it was a blind pig, was what?
Yeah.
That isn't what I wanted. Yeah. I had a whole big bundle of stuff that Lorraine Boyle,
the police matron, we made an arrest of a bunch of colored people on shoplifters downtown one time.
Yeah. Who was this lady in that picture?
Mrs. Olson.
Oh.
She was a police matron before Mary Watson.
What years was she on the department as a police matron?
Well, she came on, let's see, the first one we had was Lucille Diebel.
Which year did she come on?
Well, she was on before I was there. Lucille Diebel was on before I. And then we had another woman that came on, I would say, in the late 30s, Mrs. Heron. And then... she was there about 5 years, 5 or 6 years, and then Mrs. Anderson, her name was Olson at that time.
Mm.
And then
she married
the chief. She married this Anderson here.
Oh,
after,
she married this
yeah, after his
married.
Wife died, she married the chief, and she and I worked together for, after they were married for about 5 years, didn't we? Yeah. Yeah.
What period of time is this we're talking about? The 50s now?
Well, no, this would be later than the 50s. This would be in the...
Oh, yeah.
In the 50s.
This Mrs. Olson was...
Was a police matron.
And there
was a good one, too. She knew what was going on all the time.
And this Mary Watson that we have now, when did she come on the job as the police matron?
I would say Mary's been there about, 6...
You can look it up.
About 10 years. Mary's
no
been there...
Longer.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were still on the department.
Yeah, when Mary came on, and I've been off 6 years, you say. So she was on about 2 years, wasn't she, before I retired?
About ten years.
Her husband was a police patrolman.
He was a police patrolman, yeah, Hank. He at one time was one of the night sergeants.
Well,
my next question I've got here is, how did the role of a policeman change over the years you spent on the job? Was there any change in the way you did things or the way people looked at you or what you did?
It's a different change now. It wasn't the patrolman that changed, it was your courts that changed things for him. But as a patrolman, he was the boss on wherever you went. He was the boss. I mean, I can tell you, up in Polish Town,
Where is this here?
Well, that was what they call number 8 beat. That used to be, used to start at corner of Michigan and Lafayette and take care of all that stuff on Lafayette down as far as Farragut to 16th or to 17th Street, then from 17th Street over to Van Buren over to Madison and back up again. That was what they call the Polish beat.
Mm.
No, that wasn't all of Polish Town, but that was the what they call the
primarily Polish. where the Polish people resided.
That's
down
right,
in that
John.
Area.
That was that beat.
But you're saying then that the the role of the policeman didn't really change, but that the system changed around them a little bit, the courts?
The courts and the way things are now, you know. A man walking a beat, I'm going to tell you this, a man walking a beat would learn more than a man will learn a year in a scout car. 1 month on a beat, you will learn more than you would driving a scout car. Do you know that?
And what's some of the reasoning?
Well, for the simple reason, all right, say for instance you're walking a beat. Say we take Midland Street or something. All right, if I got something to tell a policeman, I'm not going to go out and call a police car to come over to my house, am I? I'd want the neighbors to know that I'm calling, see. All right, you're not going to stand out and walk away from your house and wait to see if you can see a scout car. But you go downtown and you can see a policeman walking a beat, you can go over and talk to him. Start talking to him just like you and I are talking now, and the first thing you say, wait, hey, how about such and such a thing is happening up my neighborhood. I saw somebody stealing something last night or something like that. He would tell you this, and then you could relay it to the detectives.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, it's too impersonal now with the cars, you believe?
That is right. That is right.
We don't get to know the people.
You don't get to know the people like you would walk on a beat.
So this is the main...
I worked over in 1937, 11 months, wasn't I, over at First and Jefferson, from 7 o'clock in the morning till any time they wanted to relieve me at night. And I learned more over there, in the time that I was over there, then I would learn taking all your books and all your, because you got to know everybody. I could go down there, and even yet, different ones I see, and the different ones come over and still talk to me.
Real nice to him.
Yeah.
Very, very.
The color, I mean, is,
yeah,
you know.
Right, we yeah. Still have the black district.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But I mean, is you got to know the people. And the way things going. Now, up on this number 8 beat, right on the corner, there used to be a jewelry store on the corner of Walters, the jewelry store. 18th Farragut. Right across the street, Johnny Carpus had a funeral home. Then across the street, there was a dime store.
Which, this is around 18th?
18th Farragut.
Right on 18th.
My second trip, we used to start at 8:30 a day, and by the time you'd get around, you'd make one trip. Your second trip around, you'd start out maybe 11 o'clock or so to make your second trip. I used to go to the bake shop on the all the rest of the policemen up there was having trouble. Trying always got in trouble up there. Big Joe Talbot got in trouble. They used to go to the toilet and go over and put it all over the doorknob, so when you get a hold of it to shake the doorknob, you get a whole handful of it. But I never had a bit of trouble. The 11 o'clock at night, we had an old bake, or there was a bake shop on the 21st in Madison that's still there, the Quality Bakery. I used to go in and get a bunch of that day-old baked goods. Carried around to the always about 15 or 20 guys standing, that's during the Depression, standing on the corner of 18th and Farragut. They'd wait for me every night. So finally one night, guy said to me, he said, don't hang around too long, you're going to have a break-in. Sure enough, I hadn't got back to the call box on the corner of Madison and 20 in Lafayette when the red light went on, and they said, you just had a break-in. They stole a pair of shoes from Lentz's shoe store. A couple of days after, the guy came along and said to me, he said, you know who got the shoes the other night? I said, no, I don't want to know. He said, well, I'll tell you just in case. So he told me who got the shoes. The guy needed a pair of shoes, and after I went by him, went over, knocked, and kicked her in.
But
I that's the way I got along with them. I mean, is I didn't do... argue with them at all. I listened to their stories and went along with them. I didn't try to bully them along the way or anything. Didn't try to say, well, come on, fellas, it's time to move. And of course, we run into all these strikes and everything, too, you know, that we had at that time. It was Felix Lawrence, Ed O'Hare, and a couple more was on the list at first, every time there was a strike. I was only one strike all the time. Remember all the strikes that we had here?
I'm not from Bay City, so why don't you enlighten me a little bit about what the years these were?
Well, I can't tell you the years. I mean, back, we had a strike, a set-down strike at the veneer works up. That's up there on Lop, or up on Cass and Harrison.
About what year was it?
It was in the 40s. One of the first set-down strikes. And I was up there for 2 months, wasn't I? On that job. Industrial Works had a strike. Every place in town, Defoe Shipyard had a strike. We was over there more times than I was at home. The only strike that I missed was the Wolverine Knitting Mills. And that was a bunch of women had a strike over there, but I was on vacation. And that's the only strike, I think, of all the strikes in Bay City, I wasn't one of the first ones called to go.
But you say there were a lot of strikes, in the 40s?
In the 40s, yeah.
Was this during the Second World War or after?
Right after the strike. Before the war. That's when the unions started to organize.
So there was, labor troubles all over town?
Yeah.
Late 30s and early 40s.
Yeah.
The start of the union movement?
That's when they started all this stuff.
When they had the first ship coming.
If you can figure from the first time the set-down strike in Flint, we had them right after that. Of course, we only had the one set-down. All the rest of them was walkouts.
The next question that I had was as far as getting back to radios again. You said the first ones were just the one-way jobs. When did they start getting the two-way radios in the police car? Do you recall that, what year that would have been?
That is something I can't remember, I'll tell you. I mean, it took them about a year to get the, after they started putting them in. Maybe they could give you that information to City Hall. I think Ken Hemp will give you that.
Well, I imagine they could, but I just thought maybe
I can't remember when they first started putting them in. I'll tell you this. Frank Simons was the engineer, and him and Anderson used to drive to Lansing about twice a week to pick up the obsolete stuff that the state police had. That's what the kind of radios we started out with.
The stuff that the state police was
obsolete to them. And Simons built that thing up all by himself. The transformers and everything else, he built them himself.
This was the original one-way radio.
Well, both ways. When he came put the two ways in, he was the original.
This was Frank Simons.
Frank Simons, yeah.
Was he a city engineer?
No, he was the radio engineer. He was hired to take care of the radios. He used to do all the repair work for the city, and then in time they moved him from the city hall. He took over the sheriff department and did all the sheriff department radio work too. He's been gone 10 years.
But after these radios were put in the cars, how did that change the job? I mean,
it made it a lot better. Because any time before, when you was in a scout car, you had to drive certain streets to watch for the red lights. If they wanted you, they put the red lights on, and then you go to the call box, and then you get your call out of that. This way here with the radios, was quicker, it was giving the public quicker service than you would before. For the simple reason, maybe you would just drive under the light, and when the light was gone, you wouldn't see it until you went by the next light, see?
So what, before the advent of the two-way radio, then what did you do if you needed some more policemen, some help?
You was on your own. Anything that you did, if the light went on and you was walking a beat, you went to that place all by yourself. You never had any help. You did this all yourself. Such and such a trouble on in the 600 block on Warner. Well, wherever you was at, and you was that boy, you went. You was the one. You was the only one. Unless once in a while they would, if they thought it was too severe, they would send the patrol wagon out.
But for most of what you'd consider your family disputes and small fights,
that was your job. Don't let that happen on your beat. Yes, that was up to you.
During this period of time when they had all these walking beats, were there ever many policemen injured as a result of this being...
No.
There weren't any people that were ganging up on
them? No, they weren't ganging up on them like they are now. I mean, there's no... You could talk to the people. They respected the policemen at that time.
But right now, then, you think that we don't have as much respect from the public as
we... No, you don't. You just stand out here and watch here. And watch the kids go by here during the day. You'll see they're right down the middle of the road, and they won't get in out of your way. Before, we could drive...
Police car's way either.
They won't get out of the police car's way. They just stand there until the police car goes by, and then they ride back into the street again. All we did when we was driving those cars before, we'd drive up and say, all right, up on the sidewalk. They respected you. They got up out of the way. We had a guy parked out here for the last 3 days, right straight across the sidewalk. So the little kids, at 8 o'clock, he goes to school over here to 8 o'clock. The little kids goes to Kelb School, has to go out in the middle of the road to get by the car. He's parked right out here in the street. And he was out. Well, if you'd have walked down the street, you could have got right in the front seat of his car. That's how much he had the street blocked off. See, no respect.
What do you think has caused this? Is there any reasons for this
change? I'd like to know. I'd like to know.
But yourself, you really don't know why there's this breakdown?
I don't know why.
Yes. No parental
care. Well, that's true. There's no... The parents don't care. I put in 2 years, maybe you don't want this on there, but I put in 2 years at Handy High School after I retired.
Well, this is one of the questions I was going to ask you, is what you've done since you did leave the
department.
Well,
I put in 2 years on security at Handy High School after I retired. The kids would come to school in the morning. He didn't allow any smoking on the grounds. That was one of the things that I had to see to, that no smoking on the grounds.
Who was the principal over there at the time?
His name was Noel. John Noel was the principal at the time. And and long hair was out. Oh, he was death against long hair. And dress. He wanted everybody dressed like they should be. About three or four times a year, they would have an assembly. He would take in the auditorium, he'd go down the middle. Stevenson was an assistant principal. Sprague was the other assistant principal. And they'd go down, you, office, you at the office, you at the office. They'd get about 10 or 15 of them, get a haircut. And then when you get a haircut, you come back and we'll let you see the rest of the assembly. And that's the way they run it over there. But what I was getting back to was 95% of the kids goes to school today, other than the younger kids. I mean the high schools. No, I'm referring to the high schools, from the 9th grade to the 12th grade. 95% of those kids goes to school in the morning, and then their parents don't see them when they go. You know that? Over here, they had two candy machines. The guy got there at 7 o'clock in the morning and filled it, and by 8 o'clock it was empty. So the woman running the cafeteria over there, Mrs. Bedell, had the machines taken out, and she bought the candy herself and hired a woman to sell candy to those kids. So that shows you how much candy those kids used to eat. That was their breakfast. They'd get in there in the morning and sit around to wait to... some of the kids had to come by bus, and they'd get there maybe 10 or 15 minutes. They could go into the cafeteria and sit, wait till the school started. And then they would take and that's where they would eat their, sit there and eat candy. That was their lunch. But to take a look at them, these kids going to school, boy, you wonder if the parents ever do see them.
You think nowadays the parents just aren't...
Well, they're not
paying as much attention.
They're paying attention to the kids.
So is there any solution to this? What do we do about it? I mean, it does appear to be a nationwide problem.
I know it's a nationwide. It's going to turn. It's a cycle that they're going through. Eventually, it'll turn back to the way it was years ago. If you look on TV now, they're having old time dancing. They're not dancing they're dancing the waltzes and the foxtrots now. They're getting closer together to the. They're not. shaking their old butts around like a...
Nostalgia or something
yeah.
like that, isn't that the word
they're
used for?
Yeah, they're getting away from that stuff. But eventually it's going to just take time. It's, the cycle has got to turn. It's just like the cycles was when I was on. It's just... The skirts are getting longer and things are doing things a little different.
Well, was there some period of time before when things were really liberal like they are now? When things were, what about the 20s? You always hear about the Roaring 20s.
Well,
what happened then?
Well, that's the Roaring 20s was just like the, it wasn't, there wasn't the drinking and the smoking in the 20s like it was, like it is now, like the kids. I wish I had a penny for every time there are more girls smoking than there is boys.
Talking about nowadays.
Nowadays, yeah. Yeah. You stand here. I stood there in the corner watching my neighbor dig out the catch basin. And the girl stood on the corner and she lit two cigarettes while she stood on the corner. That's more than what you smoke in a day.
Like before you come out of the department, in your younger years now, are you originally from Bay City?
I'm originally from Bay City, yeah.
You were,
then I went to Detroit to work on the railroad.
So you say you spent, what, about 10, 15 years?
15 years, yeah.
Is there anything you can tell us about those years back then?
They were good years.
And this was, during the 20s, right?
During the 20s, yeah. We didn't make too much money. It was, I used to work... fire switch engine for $5.96 a day. That's for...
This is when you first started on the
road? Yeah. Well, that was a regular pay. That was every... No matter if I had 10 years of service or 5 years of service, every man got the same. So you got promoted to an engineer, and then an engineer got a little bit more money.
During this time, you worked out of Detroit?
Out of Detroit. Did I put in time here, and then they needed some men in Detroit, so there was... about 8 or 10 of us transferred from here to Detroit.
So what did you finally end up being on the railroad when you left?
Just a plain fireman.
You fired the...
Yeah.
These were the
steam locomotives, yeah.
Well, and during the years that you were on the railroad, did you notice much change in the railroad industry? Did you get...
Oh, it's a lot of changes. Now, we had, at that time, no matter what, there was an engineer, a fireman, a conductor, and two helpers. Now it's just a conductor and one helper and an engineer. Three men are doing the work that five used to do before. And then you got your big diesels, where one man can operate four or six diesels at one time. Where two engines, you had to have five men to operate a steam engine. One man couldn't operate the two engines. The only thing he could operate was the brakes. The man on the front engine, he operated the brakes. That's the only thing.
So now there's not as many people working on the job as used to be.
We used to have trains. Used to have five trains, passenger trains, between Bay City and Mackinac.
Mackinac? You mean the Mackinac Bridge?
Yeah, the Mackinac Bridge. Used to be five trains each way between here in Mackinac every day, besides maybe seven or eight freight trains. And then like your years back where your logging trains used to, different branches of logging used to go in
you,
there.
Do you remember any logging trains from when you're, this was when you were a pretty young...
When I was young, when I first went on the railroad way back in 1917.
There was still quite a bit of a logging industry in Michigan.
In Michigan then, yeah. It used to be out of Wolverine, there used to be a logging, and out of Grayling used to be three or four different places where they would go into Lewiston, Boyne Mountains, and all into those places for to bring logs out. And then you used to have at least 10 or 12 switch engines in the Bay City area alone.
This is all working with the logging industry.
Yeah, logging, and you had all these things around here to take care of, too.
During around 1915, 1917, were there still any lumber yards in Bay City where they were cutting the wood?
Sure. Over on where the city barn is now, used to be Ross and Wentworth had a big sawmill over there.
This is around 18th, 19th, and
Water.
Were there any other
Then where the Defoe Shipyard is, used to what they call the Handy Box Factory, and then up there on Henry Street, where it used to be a bake shop in there. Now it's auto accessory parts. Maine, you know where the Farm Bureau is on Maine and Henry, right across, there used to be a box factory in there.
Down towards the river from Henry and
Maine. Yeah, well, right there from there over to the river.
Well, they made what, big boxes, wooden crates?
Wooden boxes, yeah. Yeah.
But like there were at that time, what, about three or four left then, and of all the old?
They were getting pretty well dwindled down in the 70s. 17, 18, long in there.
What about before that? Do you remember anything of when you were like a young boy in Bay City, what things were like back then?
I don't remember. I was born and raised over on Walnut Street, just went to school, come home, played ball and stuff like that, you know.
So you didn't really pay much attention?
Didn't pay much attention to what was going on.
What year did you graduate from high school?
I didn't graduate. I only went to 10th grade.
10th grade. All right. Well, what year was this when you
1917.
When you got out of the 10th grade. Can you describe what Bay City was like back then? What was life like? I mean, how would you go about your day? I mean, how was it different from what it is now?
Well, you'd get up and go to school in the morning, and you'd come home and you'd get out of school at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and whatever you could do is, I mean, you had chores to do at home. We didn't have a furnace, and it was up to me to see that the coal bin was filled and the wood brought in, and we had a hard coal stove, and that had to be, hard coal had to be brought in, and then seeing the stove was filled, and other coal for the kitchen stove, wood for the kitchen stove, and stuff like that had to be done.
You had electric lights back then.
Oh yeah, electric lights, yeah. And had a John outside. They finally had one put in the house.
So you say during the first years though, you had an outhouse in the back.
Oh yeah.
But was there sewage in Bay City at that time?
Oh yeah, they had sewage. Yeah. My dad was an engineer on the railroad, and The railroad man had a steady job. He worked every day. It wasn't like the guys working in the sawmills. They worked putting every day, but they wasn't getting the wages that the railroad men. Of course, the railroad man at that time was pretty well up. You know, when they thought he was a railroad man, he was like a big shot at that time.
Yeah, in other words, it was a pretty good job to have.
Pretty good job to have on the railroad, yeah. Of course, we had a lot of things. I mean, there's maybe a lot more than the rest of them. There was a family. We had, one, two, three, four brothers, myself and a sister. And then I had an aunt that lived with us. My folks raised my grandfather lived with my folks. He was an invalid. My father took care of him. So it was just it was hard. It was tough going. I mean, he worked every day to make a living.
He was. Your father was. You said was an engineer.
On the railroad.
Mm-hmm. Did he have an automobile at that time?
Well, we didn't have an automobile till after the World War I.
What kind of a car did you have?
A Rio. Mm-hmm. When my brother, I had two brothers in World War I, and when after they came home. My dad bought an automobile, first automobile, an old Rio. Ask my wife, she can tell you about it. I had it one night and broke down, and the fella towed me in from Winona Beach with it to over there, and then I got a horse that had a horse, and we went and got the horse to haul it home, put it in the yard.
Oh, yeah.
Years old.
A little young to be out there with the old car.
Yeah. Well, every one of us had a certain day that we could have the car, and that was it.
So what, the kids had a day that they could use?
They could use the car, yeah.
Somebody came by.
Pa had it when he was home.
Tell him about you working out on the farm. The old man used to come and tell me about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, as I used to peddle milk in the morning before I went to school. Get up about 4 o'clock in the morning and peddle milk with the guy by the name of Wilder. And then he died, and then his brother took over the route, and I used to peddle for them. Then they sold out to Stevens Creamery, and during the summer I peddle milk for Stevens Creamery during the summer vacation.
And then they had to work.
And then Stevens got pretty big, and then they hired a couple other guys.